When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
If you're anything like me, then you probably spend your time, or at least some of your time, reading a lot of different kinds of blog posts, essays, treatises, write-ups, white papers, all sorts of things on the creative process, on writing and drawing and reading tutorials, going to, like, I have actually a weekly ritual where I'll go to Pinterest and to Tumblr and do some inspiration collecting, you know, like different kinds of art tutorials, different kinds of character design blogs, and just grab that stuff and hoard it all into like a private Tumblr blog and a private Pinterest board. Why? Because, you know, it's useful, you know, food for thought, nourishment to keep us going at this thing and to keep exploring new things. If you're listening to this, then you're probably a fan of the Lean Into Artcast and the other kind of podcasts I do, which create content along those lines, thinking hard about visual storytelling, right? I mean, that's the tagline of the Lean Into Artcast. We think hard about visual storytelling, so you will too. And you will have undoubtedly come across some potentially conflicting advice, right? What do I mean? Listen to your gut. Trust your feelings, right? One of the things I've said in the Lean Into Artcast in the past, I think it was my 2013 resolution, was that I was going to have faith that I knew what I was doing when making things. But then we also get the advice, you know, question everything. Get critiques and feedback. Get feedback from your peers because it will be helpful in helping you find your blind spots. That's good advice too. You know, I did a book called The Warren Commission Report, a graphic investigation into the Kennedy assassination for Abrams Comic Arts. We had multiple editors. We had a lot of voices at the table. We had the writer, two artists, and a couple of editors, and an agent all talking about what this thing should be. And I have credited in interviews the team itself for some of the wonderful choices that were made in the book. You know, so it wasn't just my grand vision coming forth. It was sometimes almost like a committee, you know, a lot of people pointing out different things. So, all right, well, then what's the way to go? Listen to your gut or get critiques? Well, obviously, it's getting a combination of those things. But how do you navigate that tension? How do you know when to listen to your gut and when to get critiques and feedback, right? So what has this got to do with today's essay, Journal Microcast? Now I'm going to get more journaly. It's been about a week. Well, it has been a week. No, it's been almost a week because this is Sunday. Since I've launched the Boulder and Fleet webcomic at boulderandfleet.com, my webcomic about a bear and a bird who go from town to town and right wrongs kind of thing, this fantasy adventure story that I've been craving to do for years. And I finally decided just to commit to doing it as a webcomic, finding 4 hours a week to work on the thing. And the funny thing that I've been noticing as I've been putting the webcomic together and since launching it is that for some reason, I feel more confident about this project than any other webcomic project I've ever done before. I feel more relaxed and at ease about it. That's really what I'm talking about here. It's not confidence in the sense of this thing's gonna be a hit and, you know, people are gonna line up with their money as soon as they start reading it. No, I just feel really comfortable about making this thing and at ease about making this thing. And that's not to say that I'm being lax about it, because I'm working hard on it, and fitting a page into 4 hours and finding that 4 hours every week is definitely, you know, it can be a stressful thing. It can be a tense thing. And there are times where it's not working right and stuff. But it is like a general tone. I feel pretty good and really at ease about the thing. Why? Right? Whenever you feel something, that analytic eye, whenever something makes you go, you got to stop and ask why. Why did that happen? Why did that make me feel that way? Why am I reacting to it in such a way? What is going on either in the story that I'm watching or in the art week that I am experiencing? Well, okay, as I've thought about it, you know, it's like, what's different now than when I did webcomics before? Well, one is I have a lot more reach than I did in 2004. In 2004, you know, not that many people knew about my work or had heard of me. I was doing professional work, but it was for, you know, art agencies and freelance kind of illustration work, advertising art, stuff that really didn't promote me as an artist. So, like, while people who had money to help me make a living knew about my work. The industry. I didn't have a fan base or anything like that, what you'd call a fan base. Maybe what's different then and now is that communication tools are better, right? We've got social media, we've got push media where I can push it, put a thing into a feed and you, by following me, will get a notification that, hey, Jersey did a new thing. Maybe that's it. Because in 2004, what did we have? We had forums. WordPress was still pretty new back then, so I didn't even have a WordPress blog back then. It was all static HTML pages. So maybe it's that, yeah, it's the web is a little bit more robust, and so, like, you know, getting the word out about it is easier now. Maybe it's that, God willing, I got better as a cartoonist in 10 years. Maybe it has something to do with that. Maybe the pages aren't as much of a struggle as they were 10 years ago. Well, hopefully that's the case. Maybe. But as I think about what's different then and now and trying to measure why I feel better about it, it leads me to the question, well, what's the goal of this thing? What's the goal of this webcomic? Maybe that has something to do. Maybe your goals are different now than they were then. And I think about the way I felt when I was doing the front as a webcomic, when I was working on The Replacements with Sarah Turner. Both were weekly updating comics that I did between like 2003 and 2006. I remember, you know, really, like, the front was... Now I'm transplanting myself, right? I'm going back in time. What was my goal back then? Well, the front was me coming off of doing my first miniseries for Antarctic Press, which was PPV, pay-per-view. And I worked on it with my friend Tom Root, and I was a co-author. I was a co-creator of that book. But working with somebody else, I really felt like there were times where I wanted it to go one way, and the dynamics of working with a publisher and working with a co-collaborator meant that I couldn't do that. It would be self-indulgent for me to do that, or it would take the story off of into a direction that the whole team didn't necessarily agree with. And that's not to say that I was resentful of that relationship. I acquiesced to it because that is the nature of that relationship, but I was hungry to do something where I was in full control of the thing. So in other words, I wanted to execute a vision, okay? And that's language that's going to come up in a second again. But in making a webcomic, there was also an assumption that by giving this away for free and by going to forums and talking with people about it and by buying advertising on other people's sites and so on, that I was going to get a big audience who would react to this thing, and I would be getting emails and I'd be getting forum comments. And an old joke from that time period that I remember is that, you know, a lot of web cartoonists would say, hey, I put up 3 updates. Where's my audience? Where's the fans, you know? And the old timers, the people who had been doing this for like 3 years before us, would say like, ho, 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 you know, wait till you got 5,000 readers, then make a t-shirt. And I did break that rule. You know, it's like I had like, I've got 200 people reading my comic. I can make t-shirts and sell them now. And I did. I went and got silkscreen t-shirts, paid an arm and a leg for it, shipped them out to 5 people. But yeah, like the goal was kind of bound up in this whole idea of tapping my foot, waiting for the readership. And yes, it was about executing the vision, but I was equally concerned with building that readership fast. And part of it has to do with not having the experience. I didn't have any experience of webcomics yet. I didn't know how fast or slow it happened. You know, I had nothing to measure it against. So I'm forgiving myself for that. I'm not trying to make fun of myself about this, but it does point to something that's different now. Is now I've got 10 years of experience doing different kinds of web projects, and I know that it's a slow burn sometimes doing this stuff, so that's part of it. But I was also reminded of, or rather, these thoughts kind of got brought into focus through a blog post I read. This goes back to the beginning of the episode where I talk about, you know, you collect lots and lots of different essays and things from different authors about these topics. And David Amerland, an author, wrote a blog post on Goodreads about the changing nature of author and audience relationships. I will link to it in the show notes for this episode. And, you know, one of the big ideas of his blog, it's not a long blog post, but one of the, like, the headline of it, the general gist is that when a writer lets the work become influenced by the readers, things get weird. And I'm going to quote from his article now. He starts out by talking about how in the old days, pre-internet, you know, a writer, and he's mostly talking about, like, you know, writers of novels and nonfiction books, they would get, you know, a deal with a publisher. The writer's job was just to write the thing, and the publisher's job was to go out and promote it and, you know, generate sales, negotiate with the distributors and communicate with the fans. And yes, the author would go do signings and stuff, but they weren't expected to correspond with the audience at large, right? Maybe they would answer a fan letter, but they weren't necessarily, there wasn't an open channel between the audience and the author. And yes, that has changed now, right? Yes, we all know this. But what David Amerlin goes into, where it got interesting to me, was that he says, this stripping back, and I'm quoting now, this stripping back of layers of misconception is not without its problems. A writer close to his readers, or her readers for that matter, enjoys their ear, partakes in their concerns, gets their opinion, becomes, in the social media sense of the word, their buddy. The closeness changes the traditional alchemy of the roles. A writer who listens closely to his readers is attuned to their needs and understands what they like, but at the same time, he is influenced by their opinions and becomes subject to their direction. That is problematic. And then he goes on to say, and this is a direct quote, a writer is at his most valuable when works when he or she works not, well, now I'm misquoting because he doesn't say he or she, I'm adding that. A writer is at his most valuable when he or she works not to write a book that is byproduct, but to realize a vision. So their job is to realize a vision. That's where that vision word comes back into this thing. So yes, I was doing that when I did a webcomic before, but I got bound up in being hungry for that interaction and then spending a lot of time with the interactions. You know, I've told stories about, you know, running a forum on the Front's website back in the day and going into chat rooms on update night. We had an IRC chat that we'd go into and I would talk about the new update with the readers. I was very, very excited and hungry for that, understandably so. But one of the things that David Amerlin's post kind of points out is that sometimes one can be, the being too interested in that can muck with what you are doing. And so I think about how for the last probably 2-3 months, I've been working on the buffer for the Boulder and Fleet webcomic. You know, I'm like 8 pages ahead or something like that. And I felt no compulsion to share them with anybody, not even with friends. I just kept working away at it. And not thinking about like, oh, I need some feedback on this. Oh, I need somebody to say something about this. Because yes, we get hooked on that immediacy. Like I just talked about in the last Thunder Punch Daily, like the neat thing about Inktober is I make something every day and then I put it out there and people respond to it. And that is the cool thing about webcomics. That's the cool thing about making things for the web is that you just make it, ship it, people respond to it. But I didn't feel that compulsion. I didn't feel any urgency to get it out there. And this is as I go back and like think about my reactions to things and ask myself why. I don't think it was hesitation either. It wasn't that I was nervous about sharing it with the world, and it wasn't that I was too eager. It's just that I knew it was going to happen, but what mattered is that I was just doing the work and doing a good job of it and enjoying it. Another part of it, to be completely realistic about this thing, is that part of it is that I've just been so darn busy lately. Between, you know, finalizing pitches for follow-up jobs with publishers that I've worked for in the past. I'm recording this on a weekend, and the weekends are times where I, you know, have scheduled to do chores, you know? I've got laundry to do. I've got house cleaning to do. I've got grocery shopping to do. I've got a lot of, like, just general life stuff to do. That's like freelance work to do too. But like just being really busy has prevented me from thinking about the Boulder and Fleet comic beyond just doing the work and doing a good job of it. I haven't had the time to think about it, which I think has had a byproduct of making me feel more relaxed about the whole thing. And it makes me go back to the Inktober thing, which I talked about in the last episode, is that because of that daily deadline, I didn't have time to think about, is this a good idea or is this a bad idea? Like an example I think of is I did a sketch of a character for the upcoming Boulder and Fleet comic named RJ Rocket Arms, who is a sloth who has, RJ Rocket Arms, RJ Rocket Punch, who is a sloth who has these sentient fists. He has 5 of them, and he calls his sentient punches that he can launch off of his arms, and they can go and attack villains. Basically, like the rocket punch from Mazinger Z, Transor Z. We've seen it in like 100 giant robot stories. It's not an original idea or a new idea, but putting it on a sloth, a cute sloth, and making them somewhat sentient where they can actually respond to him and he can talk to them and then playing that into his character. I thought, oh, that's a pretty neat idea. I didn't have time to think, is it a really good idea? And as a matter of fact, when I did the sketch, just because I was like, well, I'll just dash this off because I only got 20 minutes after all, and I'll just put it out there. And if nobody likes it, what am I out of? What's the damage here? Nothing really. So nobody responded to it. Nobody was interested in it. And I can use this, and that was one of the things I was thinking about, was I can use this as an opportunity to test drive ideas, right? And so I put it out there, and just as I hit the send button, I had enough time to have a moment of hesitation, thinking like, is this the moment when I tell the world how utterly goofy and dumb I am because a sloth with rocket punches that talked to him, really? And I was like, you don't have time to do another one, so send it. Met my deadline, got the sketch out there. And I got a lot of positive feedback on the character. Like, oh, this is a great idea. You know, the people who I respect, friends who I wasn't going to for critique, were responding really positively. And it was a very nice surprise, of course. Made me feel good about ideas. But it also reinforced this idea that, like, you know what? Trusting your gut and following through on your vision it can be a good thing. And sometimes being too busy can be an inadvertent way to remind you to not get overly concerned about audience reaction. We should care about what the audience says, and we should listen to the people, especially the people who interact a lot with our work in a positive way. And that's something that Rob and I are both, I think, very careful to do about the Lean Into Artcast, is when somebody interacts with us in a positive way, we want to honor that because it means a lot to us and because we want more of that. So of course you do. But when you start out going, where's my audience, that can, get a little bit cart before the horse when it really is about executing vision. And I learned that this month in a very roundabout way. I wasn't looking for that lesson. But it turned out that, being too busy and shoehorning something in like just your spare hours. And I mean, I really do work on those pages, like, I'm going to ink a quarter of a panel before I go to bed tonight, you know, and that's logged in. That's my 20 minutes toward my 4 hours that I allow myself to work on this book. Being that busy can be a good thing because it focuses you on making the most out of the time that you have. It reminds me, I feel like I should wrap this up, but it reminds me of something John David Guerra of NightmareProWrestling.com said to me on a Comics Are Great show. He at the time we did the recording, he had a newborn baby in the house. And I asked him, like, how do you do it? How do you find the time to do the work that you have to do with a newborn baby? Because I don't have children of my own, but I was once a child and I was once second oldest of a brood of children. I remember taking care of babies and how time consuming that can be. And he said that it's not a matter of finding the time. It's about using the time to the best of its ability. And I think that that's like an inflection of this kind of thinking is, and it sounds pat, say like make the most out of the time. But I think a signal that I'm not making the most out of the time is when I'm thinking too much about what are people going to say when they see this, when it really should just be about let's make this thing. Let's make this thing to a degree that I feel at least satisfied with it. You know, not necessarily making something where I think I'm a genius, but making something where I go like, hey, that's pretty good. The kid did a thing today. Okay, so who is just talking for the past, oh my gosh, 15, 16, 17 minutes? My name is Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist. The hosting for this show is hosted on Patreon, at the Lean Into Art Patreon, patreon.com/leanintoart. But also by Kablam, kablam.com. They host it on the Comics Are Great site, and you can find the backlog of episodes there by going to comicsaregreat.com. But Kablam, I use them for all my printing for my self-published works. So when the Boulder and Fleet webcomic gets enough pages behind it that I'm going to start releasing some issues of it, I will be using them. Your one-stop printing solution for independent comics publishing. The voiceover for this episode, that lady's voice you heard at the top, that's Tara Platt of bugbotpress.com. She is a voice actress who writes books about voice acting and about acting in general. You can check that out. Music for this episode was by my brother, Elliot Drozd, elliotdrozd.com. And hopefully someday I can convince him to release more music into the world because he is really good at what he does. So I will be back with another Thunder Punch Daily tomorrow, I guess, because we're going to be doing these throughout the month of November as part of the Art Sound Off Challenge. And you can go to artsoundoff.com to find out more about that challenge to see if you want to maybe take on some of these journal microcasts yourself. And until tomorrow, guess the next thing I say is, remember, everybody.
There are times when everybody dreams of becoming very rich or powerful, but what they don't think about are the problems and responsibilities that go with it. In today's story, He-Man was tested, and he proved his worth when he was able to resist the temptation to use his great power for any selfish gain. He knew that it's just as important to know when not to use force as it is to know when to use it.